In the morning of today's daf, Bavasar is Kuf Mem Gimel. We are in Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis. Gemara had a discussion yesterday more about the topic of Yerusha. The Gemara is now moving to a slightly different topic, still having to do with Kinyanim. Our big discussion yesterday was whether or not an Uber can be the recipient, can a fetus be a recipient of a Kinyan. The Gemara had a much discussion yesterday. The Gemara's conclusion was no. An Uber cannot be the recipient of a Kinyan. An Uber is not a viable person as of yet, obviously with tremendous potential, but in its current state, not a viable fetus, not a viable person, and so therefore cannot be the recipient of a Kinyan. With that being stated, it's a higher version of a Davar Shelo Bo La'olam, something that is not yet material into this world, and so therefore cannot be the recipient of a kinyan. Okay, with that stated, we are continuing in the Gemara, right where we left off yesterday. Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis. It's more than halfway down the Amud. It's the last word in the line. Is Ahu Ahu Damar LeDevasai. A person said to his wife the following: Nichsai LeVanai DiAvalach Minaych. Now this is his second wife, as we'll see in just a moment, and what he's trying to do is he's trying to create a kinyan. So he says that my nechasim will go to your livnai, your sons, of course my sons as well, the havale menech that's going to come from me. Okay, so he is trying to now create a kinyan. It's not Yerusha, obviously. He's trying to create a kinyan between him and his unborn son. So asa bereka shisha. So now the first boy, the son from the first marriage, meaning the older son, now comes over to his father and says, whoa, 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 dad. I know you're excited about your second marriage. I get it. I realize that, but there's me, and so the older son comes and he says, "Also bere kashisha amrlei, hahu gavra might have ale." What about that kid? That could mean making a reference to himself, meaning you're gifting over some of your assets to your unborn son. What about me? So amrlei zilgani kecha mibra. So he says, "Well, you're going to acquire just like the unborn son is going to acquire." So dad's for sure gave him an ambiguous answer in terms of how he feels about him and whether or not he's going to acquire to him. Okay, so basically now what we have is the following. We have a scenario in which a person is making a pledge to give something, but also equating him to somebody else who can't acquire. So in other words, we basically have two recipients over here. One is the unborn baby, the fetus of the second wife, and the other one is his older son. So he said to the older son, yeah, you know what? You'll acquire just like your unborn son is going to acquire. Does that work, yes or no? So the Gemara says, Hanach vada lo kana dakat lesnu. So the Gemara says, look, as far as the unborn son is concerned, well, go back to yesterday's daf, and the conclusion we had yesterday is that a fetus does not acquire. So the Gemara says, so we know that whatever the father said in terms of assigning some of his estate to his unborn son, that doesn't work. The Gemara says, that's clear, I know that. Gemara says, but, hai is chelek chulak letalia b'makum benaya o les lay chulak letalia b'makum benaya. But basically, the Gemara now wants to know, but he did also, now that his older son came over to him and, you know, made a legitimate complaint, what about me? And so the father said, oh, I'm going to give to you just like I gave to him. Does that work, yes or no? Meaning, does the older son now have an additional portion of the estate in addition to the regular Yerusha that he would have received? So the Gemara brings down a debate on this issue. Rabbi Avin, Rabbi Meshav, Rabbi Yirmiyah Damrei, is chulak letalia b'makum benaya? So a number of Amorayim say that this older son does get an additional portion, and Rabbi Abov, Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha Damri leis chulak l'talya b'makom benaya. And there is another series of Amoraim who disagree and say no, that the older son is not going to get an additional portion. Now, so now we have basically a group of Amoraim, one against another. Two groups of Amoraim. So the Gemara's question is a very simple one. Does the halacha fall like you guys, or does the halacha fall like us? Like us. So the response of Rabbi Yirmiyah was, the halacha is going to follow like us. Why? Because we're older. So he took out the seniority card, and he said that based on seniority, so the halacha is going to follow like us. So the Gemara says, but the halacha is not going to follow like you because you guys are young. And you know, in other words, seniority. We've been around longer, we have more experience, and so therefore the halacha falls like us. Okay, a very interesting general discussion of the Gemara over here in terms of following the halacha based on seniority. To which the Gemara over here is going to now voice probably what's going through your head right now, and that is, we don't normally cite seniority as a means in which we're going to establish the halacha. Meaning, for sure, the Torah wants us to be mechabed. The Torah wants us to honor those who are older. But that doesn't necessarily reflect that the halacha is going to follow like the person who's older. And the Gemara makes exactly this point. Amar le mida b'kasheshisa talya milsa b'taima talya milsa. It has nothing to do with age and seniority in terms of the establishment of halacha, but rather it has to do with rationale and reason. And whoever can provide the better reasoning is the one where the halacha is going to follow. So the time am I, so the Gemara says so new, so let's hear. So what is exactly the reason, the rationale, in which the halacha should follow? So Zilla Gabi de Rabbi Avin de Asfarta Niale. So he says, well, I'll send you on a mission. You'll go to Rabbi Avin, you'll ask him the question in terms of who the halacha is going to follow in this scenario. And he'll explain it to you. Karkish by Reisha Bay Midrasha. And so he nodded his head, meaning as a way of acknowledging, okay, fine. Azalagabe. So he goes to Rabbi Avin. Amale Ilu Amale Knika Chamor Mikane. So he says, well, let me ask you a question. If I say to you, I want you to acquire like a donkey. So Mikane, does that work? Meaning I'm equating you as a recipient of a gift, just like a donkey is a recipient of a gift. Does that work, yes or no? So Deidma. Now, we have a statement, meaning we know what the halacha is over there. If I say, I want you to be kona like a donkey, lokana, it does not work. Now, in a moment, we're going to get to another case, at v'chamor. But before we get to the case of at v'chamor, so basically now let's recap. So what do we have right now? We have a scenario in which a man goes over to his second wife and says, you know, the unborn baby, the fetus that's inside of you, I want to make a kinyan to the fetus. So that doesn't work. Meaning, as per the conclusion of yesterday's daf, as per the beginning of today's daf, it doesn't work. It's not gonna hold true. Then the older brother comes and says, "What about me?" And the father says, "Oh, I'm also gonna assign assets to you just like I did to the fetus." So does that work? Yes or no? So group of Amoraim said it works. The group of Amoraim says it does not work. And Rabbi Avin, signing with the position that it does not work, says, "You know what? It's just like kenika chamor. I want you to acquire like a donkey." So basically, what we're saying is in the Gemara is that the fetus is like a donkey in the sense, in other words, not to be taken out of context, in the sense that just like a donkey cannot acquire, and if I try to make a transaction saying you will receive it and acquire it just like a donkey will, that's not going to work. So the same thing is true regarding a fetus, meaning a fetus is not going to have the ability to acquire. Once I compare and equate you to that fetus, so you're not going to acquire as well.
The difference is that the donkey doesn't even have the potential.
Right. Agreed. Okay. I hear you. But the Gemara sides with this argument. Rabbi Avin sides with this argument. Then the Gemara says, and that's the halacha. Okay. And now it prompts us now to bring us to the next point of the Gemara, which is going to be a good part of today's daf. Almost all of the remainder of today's daf is dedicated to the next topic, which is at v'chamor. Now, it is a very strange and unusual way to acquire a property or to assign property to somebody else. And I say, at v'chamor. You and the donkey are going to acquire my assets. Okay, you and the donkey. Now, here, I'm not equating you to a donkey. It's not kenikechamor, but rather it's at v'chamor. So the proper conjunction over here is and. You and the donkey are going to acquire. So let's think about this right now. In other words, what are our possibilities? The truth of the matter is there's going to be three. And there are going to be three opinions in the Gemara. But what are our possibilities? When I say at v'chamor, you and the donkey are going to acquire. So it could be that I'm obviously being silly, meaning It's the donkey certainly not does not have the ability to acquire. So when I say at bechamor, it's just a nonsensical statement. It's ridiculous, and really there is no assigning of any assets whatsoever. That's one possibility. Let's go to the other extreme. The other extreme is at bechamor, you and the donkey. I know I mentioned the donkey as being a recipient, but he can't be the recipient. He's not a recipient. He does not have the ability to acquire. You, on the other hand, do have the ability to acquire. I know I said something that was nonsense. I know it was ridiculous, but who has the ability to acquire? You do. So how much are you going to receive? You'll receive all of it. That's another possibility. And then, of course, there's a third possibility. When I say at v'chamor, I'm basically saying that I don't want to give you everything. I'm going to give you half. So basically, take all my assets. When I say at v'chamor, you and the donkey, what I'm really saying is you'll take half of it. The donkey obviously is not receiving the other half. It's just a way of me saying that I'm not going to give you everything. I'll just simply give you half. So what are our three possibilities when I say at v'chamor? Either I'm giving you nothing, or I'm giving you everything, or I'm giving you half. And as you can imagine, the Gemara has three opinions on this matter. At v'chamor, third line down, a kuf mem gimel med aleph, Rav Nachman amar kana mechsa. So Rav Nachman takes the middle approach, which is mechsa. He gets half. Rav Hamanuna amar lo amar klum. Rav Hamanuna says it was such a statement of nonsense, he really said nothing. And Rav Sheshes amar kana kol. Rav Sheshes says no, he receives everything. Okay, now, I'm Rav Sheshes mena amin Allah, ditanya. So Rav Sheshes says, now look, I'm going to prove my point and prove my case that when I designate a recipient and a secondary recipient as well, and the secondary recipient is somebody who cannot receive, like a donkey, so Rav Sheshes says that really the first recipient receives everything, and he says, and I know this is so based on a brisa, ditanya. Rav Yosef Omer Lecha Mar B'Kishishus El Apinim Shabo. Okay, we're talking here about cucumbers, and just a word of introduction. We know that you have to, when you collect your produce in the fields, your fruit, your vegetables, your grains in the fields, so there's a mitzvah in the Torah to give trumos and maizros. Truth of the matter is, the mitzvah in the Torah is only to give the fruit, and the truth of the matter is according to Rashi and Tosfos, throughout the Gemara, it's not even all fruit, it's just grapes, olives, and grains. The Rambam, however, takes the position that it's all fruit, but here we're talking about a cucumber, so admittedly, it's not a mitzvah in the Torah to take off trumas and maizros from a cucumber, according to everybody, but it's not going to impact our discussion whatsoever. There's a mitzvah, be it d'oraisa, be it d'rabbanan, there's a mitzvah to take off trumas and maizros and give it to the kohen. We also know that when you take off trumas and maizros to the kohen, you take off 2%, you give it to the kohen. 2% is the recommended amount. In other words, it could be a little bit more, could be a little bit less. There is a range. And the basic halacha is that when you take off trumas and maizros, you have to take off and give the kohen the better portion, or at least a portion that is qualitatively as good as the others. This is what's called being mafresh tov ala tov, the good over the good. So that means that the 2% that I give to the kohen is going to be a very good representation of the rest of the produce. If, however, what I give the kohen is something that's inferior, so the Torah says don't do that. Is it effective? Well, in a moment we're going to say yes it is, but it's something that you should not do. You should not do ra'ala tov, but you should tov ala tov. So, we're talking about cucumbers over here, and the Gemara is assuming right now that there may be a bitter portion of the cucumber, but it's interior to the cucumber. So, let's go now back to the brisa. Let's read the brisa inside. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Ein lecha mar b'kishos el panimi. So when we have the cucumbers, there is a bitter portion, but it's internal. And the internal portion of the cucumber is bitter. Shabo. Lefichach. Nekishu tarm. Therefore, that when you do take off truma, mosif alachitzon shabo v'toreim. So what you should do is you should do the following. You should add. The Rashi over here says, add the amount of a beitza. In other words, add another cucumber to your truma, so that when you do take off truma, you now know with certainty that you're giving the kohen 2% of good quality cucumber to pater, to now exempt the rest of the cucumbers. So, what did you just hand to the kohen? You handed to the kohen some cucumbers, of which, qualitatively, some of it's good and some of it's bad. And so, basically, now, you are gifting to the kohen as your truma both things that are... I'm going to, right now, I'll present it black and white. Both things that are effective and ineffective. And what do we say regarding this gift to the Kohen? It's all truma, and it will potter the rest of the produce. Amai, the Gemara now says, isn't this comparable to at v'chamorhu? Isn't this the same thing as you and the donkey? Now, when we're saying that you and the donkey are two recipients. Over here we're talking about the item that's being transferred. I know it's not exactly the same. But still the point is that I'm giving to the Kohen something which is both good, both effective and ineffective, and the Braisa says that the whole thing works. The whole thing is going to be pushed through. And so in the case of the Truma, you see that the whole thing works as and goes over to the Kohen. Rav Sheshia says, this would be a proof to me, where I say that if I'm looking at two recipients and I'm designating two recipients, and one is effective and the other one is ineffective, basically 100% is going to go to that which is effective. Rav Sheshia says, this would seemingly be good proof for me. So the Gemara says it's not a good proof. Shani hasam de madaraisa truma mal yasi hidam rabbi yalai minayin latar minerala yafe she truma so truma she nemar velo sisu alav chet barim chemes chaba mimenu v'im eno kadosh nisiyas chet lama mikan latar minerala yafe she truma so truma. I know I just read a lot. Basically what the Gemara just said is that the idea that the bad and good is effective and, no, I'm sorry, let me do it in the right order. The good and the bad are effective or ineffective. That is a false assumption. It's simply not true. When you're taking off truma, if what you give to the Kohen is ra, is bad, like bitter cucumbers, min ha-Torah, that works. The Torah, the lechatchila, does not want you to do that. But the Torah is also at the same time acknowledging that if I give to the Kohen something which is qualitatively inferior, it's not ineffective. It is bidi'eved effective. So as far as if I'm handing to the Kohen both good and bad, we're saying all of it's truma. Do you know why we're saying all of it's truma? Because min ha-Torah, both work. Both serve as truma. And so therefore, it's not comparable to the case of At V'chamor. In the case of At V'chamor, you are a recipient. The donkey is absolutely not a recipient. And so therefore, these cases are not comparable with one another. The Gemara dismisses this proof for Rav Sheshes. Yeah.
Is there a case where a chamor is actually designated because it's a firstborn?
No. But we're talking about it becoming a recipient. Meaning, we're not talking about it, meaning as an item being transferred. We're talking about the donkey actually being able to receive. He's not. He's not able to receive. Amalei Rav Mordechai, Rav Ashi, Meisiv, Rav Avya, Tuyufta. So Rav Avya now is going to be challenging with the following challenge. Meisiv Echamesh Nashim Vehem Shtei Achayos. Okay, so there were five women. Of which, of the five women, two of the five are sisters to one another. Veliket Echad Kakala Shal Te'enim. A person gathered a basket of figs, v'shalam ha'isa, and it belonged to him, v'hashal shviyas ha'isa, and it was during the Shemitah year, v'amar harei kuchem mekudeshes li b'kakalazu. So, with a collection of figs that he gathered, they all now belonged to him, it was during the Shemitah year, which means that they were hefker, so he picked it up from hefker, and they're now his figs, and he now hands the basket over to one of these five women, the Kabbalah Achas Memaide Kulan. And she now is also going to be serving as a shliach for the other four women as well. And so now he's going to do in a style of which is going to be tremendously time saving, is that instead of being Mekadosh all five women at, you know, one after another in sequence, he's going to be Mekadosh of all five women at the same time. There is no limit in terms of the number of wives you can marry. The king is limited, of course, in terms of the number of wives that he can marry. Lo yarbe lo nashim, but in terms of a man, a regular man, he can marry as many women as he can support. So here now, he's marrying five women at the same time. Here comes the problem, or the problem is actually already evident. In that, of the five women, two of them he cannot marry. Two of them are sisters. Now he can marry one of the sisters, but he can't marry both sisters. So Amru Chachamim Eina Chayos Mekudasho. So the Chachamim say that the two sisters are not going to be Mekudashos. Now one of the two could be, in theory, but because he did it in this way, both are going to be excluded from the marriage. Now, let's just spend a couple of moments reminding each other why it is that the two sisters are not going to be mekudeshes. Why not one of them being mekudeshes? So einachas mekudeshes. So the Rashbam, this takes us back to the Gemara in Kedushin. The Rashbam reminds us einachas mekudeshes. The Kedushin shein mesurim lebiyah lo have Kedushin klal ve'afidu mechad minayu. Because we have a principle of what's called Kedushin mesurim lebiyah, that in order for Kedushin to work, to be effective, it has to be Kedushin that leads to biyah. Okay, in other words, obviously, at the point of Kedushin, you're not going to have Bia with her, although one of the ways that you can be Mekadesh a woman is through Bia, but we're not discussing that. We're talking about Kedushin Bekesef. But in order for Kedushin to be effective, it has to lead to Bia. You must have Bia with this woman. Be able to have Bia with this woman. Being that you were Mekadesh her and her sister, and now you cannot marry a pair of sisters, so therefore you cannot have Bia with one of them for the concern that maybe the other one is already your wife, and so therefore the Kedushin does not work over here. You cannot Bia with the other one. So it's Kedushin She'inan Misurim Labia. It's one of the Al-Kagam. It's one of the six times in Shas where we pass on like Abai, not like Rava. And Kedushin She'inan Misurim Labia is Einam Mekudesh, so Kedushin is not going to work. Fine. So that's why the man is not married to either of the sisters. Okay, so of the five women that he was attempting to be Mekadesh, the two sisters are excluded. But of course that means that the Kedushin with the three other women do, in fact, work. And so, Achayushu de'en Mekudashas, Hanachris Mekudashas. The Gemara now points out exactly this point, that the Kedushin with the two does not work, the two sisters does not work, but with the three other women, it does work. V'amai at v'chamorhi. So this is now comparable to the case of at v'chamor. Is it not? So it's here it seems like it's a great comparison, because here we're talking about the effectiveness of a transaction. I understand this is marriage, but in terms of our discussion, we're going to just look at it as a transaction. Of the five women, two he cannot perform a Kedushin with. Three he can perform Kedushin with. He does all five of them together. And effectively what happens now is that of the five, two does not work, three does work. Whoever doesn't work is not going to work, and whoever does work is going to work. And so what we've just learned together is that in a scenario where I'm designating a transaction, so for the ones that it's ineffective, it's ineffective, and for one that it's effective, it's going to be effective. And so this goes against the position of Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna took the position of lo amar klum. The whole thing doesn't work. We see clearly over here, that's not true. So Amalei Haina de Chazai Rav Huna bar Avia bechama de Mosiv Rav Yavia to Yufta. So the Gemara says, that he went to bed. He had a dream, and in the dream, Rav Avia presented this particular challenge to him, and it seems to be a very good refutation of Rav Hamnuna's position that if I try to create a transaction with a group that does work and a group that doesn't work, so Rav Hamnuna says the whole thing doesn't go, and we have now seemingly proven that no, the portion that's effective is effective, the portion that's ineffective is ineffective. So the Gemara dismisses all this with one line. V'lavmi ukimna, the Gemara says, yeah, but you know, when going over this case, we gave an ukimta. We gave the following context, which is, Amar haru'uya mikem labia tizkadeshli. When the man handed over the basket of figs to these women, one woman receives it on behalf of all five. So we said that for the three non-sisters, it works. For the two sisters, it does not work. Now what the Gemara is saying is, yeah, but you know what he also said? He said, when handing over the figs, Haru'uya mikem labia tizkadeshli. Which women are going to be married to me? Only the ones that are fit. So he already qualified in his statement that only the ones that are fit are going to be married to me. And so therefore he, in his statement, excluded the two sisters. And so therefore this is not the case of At V'chamor. Huh?
He could be married to either.
I understand that. But again, the Gemara in Kedushin says that either one does not work. It's a Kedushin, She'ina Mesurim Labia. It doesn't work to either of the sisters. So but because he qualified when handing over the basket of figs, so therefore this is not comparable to the case of Ad V'chamor.
He didn't have to qualify right away. Because there's two figs when you do two together.
Yeah, but in other words, but because he lumped all of them together, again, according to Rav Hamnuna, without the qualification, if the Kedushin is not working for one part of the group, it's not going to be working for the whole group, for the other group as well. And so the Gemara is saying, according to your Rav Hamanuna, how did you learn that case? And his response is, or the Gemara's response is, no, in that particular case, he qualified. But without the qualification, so then, according to Rav Hamanuna, since it doesn't work for one part, it doesn't work for the other part as well. Okay. All right, so period. Okay, so that ends the discussion of the Gemara. So where do we stand right now? So in the case of Ad V'Chamor, where a man says that I'm going to assign assets over to you and the donkey. So again, three different ways to understand it. Either the whole statement was nonsense, or the donkey, just a portion about the donkey is nonsense, or half and half, mechza mechza. In other words, that it's another way of him saying that you're going to get half. In the Gemara, we had three opinions. We had Rav Nachman, it says mechza. Rav Hamanuna says nothing, and Rav Shesha says everything. And the Gemara brought down a brisa regarding Truma, seemingly supporting Rav Sheshes, a Mishnah regarding the five women, seemingly refuting the opinion of Rav Hamnuna, and the Gemara ends the discussion, the Rambam Pasans like Rav Nachman. It's Mechza Mechza. In other words, the recipient is going to get half, in the case of Ad V'Chamor. Continuing in the Gemara, we are now more than halfway down in Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. Ha'ud Amar L'Devasar Nechzai Lach L'Vanecha. A man goes over to his wife and he says, I'm assigning my estate over to you and to the children. Okay, so we now know that the man basically wants to gift his property away to his wife and his children. Now, here it has to be a gift. In other words, if he just dies and allows the Yerusha laws to kick in, his wife, of course, is going to get nothing. She'll get supported by the estate, as we've said time and again, but the wife is not going to get any Yerusha. But what he's doing now before he dies is he's assigning. He's assigning over his assets where he says to his wife, you'll get a portion and the kids will get a portion. And so now it's a simple question, and even without a Gemara, we can easily deliberate this right here, and that is, how much is his wife going to get? So what are your two options? Either she's going to get 50% of the estate, meaning by him saying to his wife, you'll get and the kids will get. So in other words, you and the kids are on equal footing with one another. You'll get 50%, the kids will get 50%. Or the other way to understand it is that you'll get a portion just like any of the kids are going to get. So if the kids are going to be receiving a portion, you, the wife, are also going to be receiving a portion commensurate to that which one of the kids is going to get. Okay, so which way is it? Gemara is going to debate. So, ha'ud amar lo devasar nechzai lach levanecha, the assets are going to go to you and the children. So the amar Rav Yosef kanta mechzas, Rav Yosef says she acquires half of the estate. In other words, Rav Yosef's understanding is that she is just not one of the kids, but rather she is as significant as all the children in this particular formulation. So Rav Yosef says, look, you want a proof? I'll give you a wonderful proof, and that is Rabbi Omer v'haisa la'aron ulivanav. So Aaron will receive together with his sons. He's talking about the lechem upon him, where Moshe dictated that Aaron and the sons are going to receive. And the Brisa tells us, Mechzal Aaron and Mechzal Levanav. Aaron will receive half of the 12 loaves, that means six, and his sons are going to be receiving half. So, you see that when you create an assignment, and you're assigning and I know this is not the same exact case, but it's comparable. When I'm assigning a parent and the children, the parent is going to be receiving a portion that is equivalent to all the children. So here too, when the husband is assigning his assets to his wife and his children, his wife is going to be receiving a portion that is equivalent to all the children. So Amalei Abaye Bishlam Asam Aaron Bar Chalukah Hu LaHachi Part BeRachmana LeMishkal Paga Isha Lav Bas Yerushahi. So Dayeshetito Kechem and Abanim. So Abaye says, look, I can easily see a distinction between these two cases. In the case of the Lechem upon him, even if Moshe Rabbeinu would have said nothing, Aaron, of course, would have received a portion because he's a Kohen. I mean, also Kohen Gadol, but he's a Kohen. So in other words, without Moshe even having said anything, Aaron already is considered a recipient. Now that Moshe says, you and the kids, so obviously Moshe Rabbeinu meant to add something. What did he mean to add? That you, Aaron, are going to receive a portion commensurate to all the kids. Over here, however, when the husband is assigning his estate to his wife and his children, remember, before his assignment, what was the wife going to receive? Nothing. Again, I say nothing in the context of Yerusha. she'll get supported. But from a ownership standpoint, she is nothing. She's not going to receive anything. So by now, the husband injecting her into the equation and saying, oh, you'll receive something. So, right, tafasta meruba lo tafasta, meaning you're now going to give her half of the estate? No, she was starting from a point of zero. So let's not go crazy. Let's not give her half of the estate. Give her a portion that is equivalent to one of the children, not all of the children. So Abai says, I can easily see the distinction between the case of the lechem upon him and our case over here. Ini. The Gemara says, this is true. So the Gemara says, now there was an incident in Nahardah, again, the husband assigned estates to his wife and his children, and Shmuel ruled that the woman, the wife, is going to be receiving half of the estate. Now, by the way, it should not come... Well, no, I'm sorry. Never mind. I was going to make a comment. No, it's not true. Okay, let's go on. Bitzveria of Agbe Rav Yochanan Palga. A similar incident happened in Tveria where a husband assigned his estates to his wife and his children. And Rav Yochanan in Tveria also determined that the wife is going to be receiving half of the estate. Vesuki asked Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef Amarahu Deme Kalila Deshadu Debe Malka A Abule V'A Isteruge. I'm so happy I got through that sentence. That wasn't easy. So there was another incident where the king levied a tax against the people. Deshadu Beimalka, and he levied the tax on the people who were Bule and Isteruge. Now Bule are people that are wealthy. I'm gonna shake everyone's memory over here, myself included. How do I know that the word bul is referencing people that are wealthy? So you remember we did the Gemara in Gittin, and we discussed the Gemara in Gittin, the idea of prizbul. Now what's the idea of prizbul? The idea is that it's a mechanism in which the rabbis made a institution so that when we get to the Shemitah year, the end of the Shemitah year, so all loans which are going to be canceled and forgiven at the end of the Shemitah year are not going to be canceled and forgiven. And that is a mechanism called Prizbul. It's a document that's written up that's called the Prizbul document. And if you remember, back there, we discussed what does the word Prizbul mean? So Prizbul, it's a contraction of two words. It is an institution that is made for the Priz and for the Bull. And if you remember, Rashi over there in Gittin says that what does the word Bull mean? Wealthy. It basically is an institution that's made for the wealthy. Okay? It's an enactment that's made for the wealthy because the wealthy people are obviously the lenders. And what we want is we want to stimulate lending. And so basically we're saying to the lenders, you're worried that your loans are going to get canceled and you're not going to lend to begin with. Prizbul, an institution for the wealthy.
What does Priz mean?
Priz means like a gift. Right, so a gift for the wealthy. So okay, so in other words, it's an institution that's made for the wealthy. So anyway, so the word bull is a reference to wealthy people. Okay, so back to our Gemara over here. So there was a tax levied, and it was specifically two groups of people were taxed: the wealthy people and the non-wealthy people, the poor people. Now Amar Rabbi. Now, being that these two groups were both identified in this particular assessment, in this particular tax, so therefore what is meant over here is that it's going to be evenly distributed where the wealthy are going to be giving 50% and the poor are going to have to give 50%. So you see over here that when I'm identifying two different groups of people, so in terms of the percentages, we're going to assume it's a 50-50 percentage, even though that doesn't reflect in this particular case their financial ability, but still, once the two groups are identified, we assume it's 50-50. So now what the Gemara is assuming is like this, that in the case of the of a husband assigning his estate to his wife and his children, so basically now he created two camps, his wife and his children, 50-50. Just like over here, when there was a special assessment that was made by the king, and it said, Abuli Vastrubuli, it's 50-50. So this seems to be a support now that it should be a 50-50 division. Hachi hashta. I'm sorry. The I'm sorry. Yeah. Hasha Maida Kakasi Abulav Esterugala Mamadani Pagavahani Paga. The Gemara basically says the same point that Abaye made earlier. Look, before the king actually identified who is responsible to have to pay these taxes. So what the Gemara says is that before the king made his qualification, we knew already that everyone's got to give. Not everyone has to give the same. The wealthy are going to give more. The poor are going to give less. We knew that already. And so, but everyone has to give. And so by the king now identifying and putting them into two groups, you, the wealthy, and you, the poor, are going to have to pay. So what the king now was saying is that everyone already had to pay. It's just now a question of how much everyone's going to be responsible for. So by the king saying this group and that group, 50-50. Again, over here, it's different because before the assignment, how much was the wife going to receive? Zero. And so therefore, once again, we can't go from zero to 50. That's too big a jump. So again, the Gemara refutes this, just like Abai refuted the case of the lechem upon him in the Kohanim. Rav Zera asks the following question, challenges from the following brisa. A person says he wants to bring a carbon mincha, and he wants to bring 100 isaron, and he's going to bring it in 2 kalim into 2 different utensils. Now, we know that when it comes to a mincha offering, the largest mincha offering that can be brought in 1 kli is 60 isaron. So that's the biggest number. A person wants to bring 100 isaron, and he knows that there's no kli in the Beis HaMikdash that can fit 100. So he says 100 to be divided by 2 into 2 kalim. Now, how is that division going to take place? One would easily imagine that 50 isaron would go in one kli and 50 would go in another kli. Maybe, however, that's not what the Braisa says. The Braisa says maybe shishim b'kli echad v'arbim b'kli echad. The Braisa says it's going to be 60-40. 60 into one kli, 40 into another kli. V'imhevi chamishim b'kli echad v'chamishim b'kli echad yatzeh. Now, if you divide it 50-50, that would be fine, but the proper way to divide it is 60-40. Okay. And the Gemara's diuk is very simple. We're now on the top of Kuf Mem Gimel Medbeis. Imhevi in lechatzchila lo. Yes, if you bring the evidence, fine, 50-50, but that's not what you should do. What you should do is divide it 60-40. Isaka daka kol ki ay gavna pago pago afil lechatzchila nami. Now the Gemara says, now look, let's think about this. Meaning he's taking 100 isaron, which you know you can't go into one kli, and he's dividing it amongst 2 kalim. So if our default assumption is that it should be a 50-50 division here, I mean it both in terms of amount and in terms of percentage. It's the same because we're starting with the number 100. So if we're assuming that it should always be 50-50, so then 50-50 should work, not just as a bidi'eved, 50-50 should work lechatchila. And again, now it takes us back to the discussion of a man assigning his estate to his wife and his children. So if our default assumption that it should be 50-50, a division between these two groups, so then that's how it should be. But in the case of the mincha, we don't say 50-50. We say 60-40 is the preferred division. Hachi hashta, the Gemara says it's not comparable. So the Gemara says, look, in the case of the mincha, let's talk about his intention. Now I know it's hard to read minds. I admit that. But in other words, when he says that he wants to give 100 isaron, so really what he wants to do is he wants to give a very big mincha offering. That's what he'd like to do. However, it's a logistic issue. We just simply don't have a kli in the Beis HaMikdash that can handle that kind of amount. But in terms of what he wanted to give a very big karban. The reason why he divided it to 2 kalim is just simply because logistically, there is no kli large enough to hold 100. But we certainly do know, however, that if there was one that could hold 100, he would have done it. By virtue of the fact there isn't, so it's going to be divided to 2 kalim. But one of the kalim is going to maximize the amount that it could hold, which would be 60. That's why over there, it's going to be divided to 2 kalim, 60-40. One of the kalim is going to reflect his intention, which is, I want to give a very large mincha offering. Okay. Our second discussion of today's daf is a question of when a person assigns his estate over to his wife and his children, is his wife now going to be a 50% shareholder of the estate? Or is she just going to be receiving a share commensurate to one of her children? The Gemara deliberates this very point, and the Gemara now is going to conclude. V'hilchusa kavasa de Rav Yosef. In three areas in halacha, the halacha will follow like a Rav Yosef. One, sada, the case of the field, taking us back to the beginning of the Masechta, Daf Yud Beis of Baba Basra. That was a long time ago, where we discussed a scenario in which a father gave over properties to his children, didn't explain which property is going to go to which son. One of the sons already owned a property contiguous to one of the properties that was given over by the father. So he's going to be receiving the field, or I should say better, he's not going to be receiving the field that is necessarily contiguous to his property. If we are talking about the finality of a kinyan, when is the finality of the kinyan going to take place? So if that was a discussion we also had back in Baba Basra, that is a sukin ba'oso inyan, as long as they are talking about this particular issue. Once they move on to a different topic, so then that finalizes the discussion. And finally, mechsa. And then our topic of discussion, when a man assigns property over to his wife and to his children, how much is the wife going to be receiving? So we had a machlokas in our Gemara between Rav Nachman and Rav Yosef. No, sorry. I made up that part with Rav Nachman for forgiveness. Rav Yosef says that she's going to be acquiring half of the property, and the Gemara says, and that's in fact the halacha. Okay, so on our second discussion of the day, in terms of assigning his wife a portion of the property, you and the children, so the Gemara concluded like Rav Yosef, that the halacha is going to be like Rav Yosef in this regard, that the wife is going to be receiving half. Okay, next. Ha'ud d'shadar piska d'shirai levese. A person sent some silk to his house. Amar Rabbi Ami. Now, who is going to be the recipient of that silk? Meaning, which members of the household are going to be receiving the silk? Ha'ru'uyim labanam labanam, ru'uy labanos labanos. That portion which is fit for the son, meaning Mabushe Zacher, says the Rashbam. Meaning, I guess it's not just fabric and material, but it's actual clothing. So, the clothing that is to be worn by the men should be given over to, should be assigned over to the sons. And for the portion that is fitting for the women, that should be assigned to the women. Now, the Gemara says that's assuming that he had no daughter-in-laws. But if he had daughter-in-laws, so then the assumption is that all this is going to be going over to his daughter-in-laws. However, if his daughters are not married, so then he wouldn't choose his daughter-in-laws over his unmarried daughters. In other words, so then we're going to assume that it goes to his daughters over that of his daughter-in-laws. Okay, one more topic of discussion for today. A person says he's going to give over his assets to his banai. Now, banai in Hebrew literally means his sons, right? That's how it would be translated. Havale bra ubarta. Now, he had a son and a daughter. Mikaru inche levra banai. So now, here comes the question. He has one son and one daughter. He says, he's assigning a part of his asset to his sons. Now, when he said it in the plural, did he mean, when he said the word sons, his son and his daughter? Or did he mean his son? And is it normal language to refer to your son as your sons in the plural? So, Odilma, lo kari inshi lebra banai, ulamushka lebarta bamatana kaase. Or maybe no. Maybe when he said the word sons in the plural, he meant his son and his daughter. And what he was doing is, obviously this is not Yerusha, but he was assigning it as a gift currently. Amra bai tashma. So the Gemara says, do we have anywhere in Tanakh where we have this idea where a person would refer to his son as his sons? So the Gemara says, yeah, b'nei dan chushim. Gemara says, sure. Look at the end of Sefer Bereishis, and you'll see over there, as we go through the Shvatim and their children, so Dan had a child. And the Torah says, Uvenei Dan. And the sons of Dan are, now in English, what you would expect now, the sons are, that's both plural, and then you would expect a list of sons. And meanwhile, how many sons did Dan have? One, Chushim. And parenthetically, by the way, his name Chushim, he was not capable of hearing, meaning he was deaf. And the but
he had grandson.
Ah, so you see over here that it is seemingly the one son is referred to as Vinay. So Amalei Rava Dilma Kiditana Debechiska Shayim Merubim Kichushim Shel Kaneh. So the Gemara says, yeah, but maybe over here what the Torah was projecting, was prognosticating, is that although Chushim himself was one, but then of course he would branch out into many sons. In fact, we know, right? You just follow the Torah lately, meaning it's been partial, but Midbar was not. I was thinking it's like just last week. Okay, it was more than last week, right? We already went through Nasa and Baloscha. Okay, anyway, but if you go through Sefer by Midbar, you'll see that Sheva Dan ended up becoming the populated Shevet, even though Dan himself only had one son, which just also speaks to the idea of you never know, right? Right. Binyamin had 10 sons, right? And Binyamin ended up becoming a small Shevet. Okay, so but anyway, so it could be that Uvnei Dan, not necessarily referring to Chushim himself, but the Gemara projecting in terms of it's going to end up becoming a lot. So Ela Marava Uvnei Palu Eliav. We have another seemingly good proof. It says, and the sons of Palu Eliav. So Rav Yosef Avar Uvnei Esan Azaria. And the Gemara brings another proof of Uvnei Esan. Okay, so we seemingly have a lot of we have a lot of psukim, not a lot, but we have a number of psukim in the Torah and in Tanakh, which speak to this idea that when you say the word b'nei, it could be referring to one and not two. Period. And that ends that discussion. So on this next part, where the Gemara asks the question, a person is assigning his estate over to his sons. He only has one son and one daughter. So is it possible that he meant to refer to his one son with the word Banai? Gemara says yes. At least we have Pesukim and Tanakh that would seem to indicate that. So he says, I'm going to give my assets over to my sons, and he had a son and a grandson. So Kari Insha Labar Bra Bra Olo. Would a person refer to his grandson as his son? So Rav Chaviv Amar Kari Insha Labar Bra Bra. Marba Ravashi Amar Lo Kari Insha Labar Bra Bra. Gemara has a debate whether a person would refer to his grandson as his son. Tanya Kavasi the Marba Ravashi Amudar Nami Banim Mutar Bibne Banim. So the Gemara quotes a Bryce, so the Bryce certainly seems to support the opinion of Marba Ravashi. A person says, I'm not going to get benefit from my sons, so it's only from his sons that he's not allowed to get benefit from, but he's allowed to get benefit from his grandsons, meaning they do not qualify as somebody who we would normally refer to as his sons, and therefore they're not included in the neder. So now we work in the other direction. When a person is assigning assets to his sons, it means his biological sons, not his grandsons. A person doesn't refer to that. Yeah, yes, it's true. The Gemara Yavama talks about harei, right, b'nei banim, harei and kevanim, that grandsons are like sons. But again, we're talking about in terms of what was his intent in the statement. Okay, that we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the Mishnah. So once again, a number of discussions to be had over the course of today's daf. The first one and the largest part of today's daf was at v'chamor. A person was assigning assets over to you and the donkey. What's meant by that? So the Gemara had a three-way machlokas. What was meant by that? The halacha is like Rav Nachman. Half of it, what he meant was half of it was to go to you. Second big discussion of the day is where a person assigns his estate over to his wife and his children. The Rav Yosef's position, which is the halacha, is that half of his estate is going to go to his wife and the other half is going to go to his children. The third discussion for today, the Gemara then had a quick discussion about sending clothing back home, who's going to be the recipients of the clothing. The Gemara gave a line of succession of who's going to be the recipients of the clothing. Third big discussion of today is that a person has a son and a daughter, and he's assigning his estate over to his sons in the plural. Did he mean just his son, or did he mean his son and his daughter? The Gemara seemingly concludes he meant his son. Fourth discussion of the day, a person assigns his estate over to his sons, and he had a son and a grandson. Is the grandson included? The Gemara seems to take the position that the grandson is not included.